Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of KBOO at the Clinton Presents, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, A Tale of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, Thursday, September 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The Best Democracy Money Can Buy is a real-life detective story told in a film noir style with cartoon animation, secret documents, and hidden cameras to tell the story of renowned investigative reporter Greg Palast and his associate's journey to expose the darkest plans of the uber-rich to steal America's democracy. Again, that's KBOO at the Clinton Presents, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, A Tale of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, Thursday, September 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Portland. Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, September 6th, 2017. And as we mentioned yesterday, the tires are burning, the brakes are shot, and we're running on fumes. I think that although that might not be apparent to most Americans who are still living their lives, it's definitely apparent to the rest of the world who wait with bated breath to see what Trump's next act will be and where that will leave the rest of us, because there's the population of planet Earth and then there's Donald Trump. This is your community radio, your sanctuary radio, your DACA radio, your resistance radio, your whistleblower radio, and of course, your fake news radio at 90.7 FM on the air, KBOO.FM, everywhere. And have we a theme today? Yes, we do. Nature bats last. And finally, it's being brought home to the proverbial average American that there are some things that cannot be stopped by technology, even though they are to a certain degree created by technology. Storms, for example, and fires. Who would have believed that a fire would jump the Columbia River? A fire only what, 24 hours in the making? Not a very old fire. It jumped the Columbia River. People that I spoke to and said, I asked, what about that? That is historic. That is outside history. That is really some kind of transcendental jump. And people basically said, it's a big fire, without any concept of what that would mean. That is what was more frightening to me than the fire itself, was the absolute lack of understanding, apprehension, or admiration for that matter, of an event. The very young fire had jumped the Columbia River. That really brings it home, or it should. People that I would have considered to be intelligent people, more perhaps intelligent than the average person on the street. These were smart guys. And the fact of the Columbia River jump had made so little impact. We are going to be speaking, though, today with Joy Keane from BART, who is going to bring us up to speed on the state of the watershed, what's left of it, and how Mount Hood itself might recover, because it's about pattern recognition in it. And pattern recognition is going to be at the forefront, probably the key component of how we people, as human beings, the progenitors of so much of our own woe currently, how we might be able to assist the watershed, the mountains, the rivers, the streams, how we might assist these in restoring themselves. Because in restoring themselves, they, of course, are restoring us, though we don't deserve it, I would argue. Whether for today, areas of smoke, I'll say, and how. Otherwise, mostly sunny, there we go. Oh, it's a nice day out, isn't it? It's lovely weather, with a high around 85 and a light southwest wind for tonight. Again, there is a chance of showers and thunderstorms. That's the good news and the bad news, of course. And it'll be mostly cloudy, lows around 65. Tomorrow, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, high around 75. And for tomorrow night, there is again nearly a 50-50 chance of showers and overcast skies with a low around 63. There's your weather for the next couple of days. Lately, a couple of days wasn't much time. Now it's a lot of time. Now a lot can happen. And we've got the hurricane barreling down on the Caribbean, 185-mile-an-hour winds. Again, this is a storm of historic proportions. I think we have Joy on the line right now. Joy, good morning. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Chris. How's it going?
Well, we haven't, myself, I can say I'm very happy that we did not have to evacuate. I have a very enormous horse. He weighs 2,000 pounds. I just can't, words can't describe him, but he doesn't fit in most horse trailers.
Yeah.
So this was going to be, evacuating Joey was going to be my major problem, but now it seems we're on higher ground, fire ground. We're on some kind of ground. I want to ask you about the watershed and Mount Hood. I myself believe that the best way to restore forests is to stay out of them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Although, you know, we all enjoy the gorge. It's a beautiful place to hike. You know, I think in the short term, I think people are really emotional right now. And I think first we have to focus on the people and make sure everyone's safe and make sure all the animals are safe. You know, reach out to your friends and family in the gorge and make sure that they are taken care of. And, you know, make sure that nobody brings themselves into harm out in the gorge. I know everybody's curious to get out there, but let the first responders take care of what needs to happen out there. You know, and so first and foremost, safety. But second, you know, BARC has been looking at the long-term health of the forest, and fire is it's a natural part of the ecosystem. It's, you know, to a woodpecker, a black forest is a beautiful forest, and someday it will be beautiful to us again, too. We want to make sure that the forest doesn't receive any further harm. So if people are feeling really helpless and they want to get involved, we have lots of ways for them to ensure that the forest doesn't, that the forest is protected in the future, you know, prevent salvage logging and that sort of thing. But, you know, the forest will regenerate. A lot of forests actually need fire to regenerate. If you want to get involved, there's making sure that the people of Cascade Locks are taken care of and that they aren't further victimized by, you know, multinational corporations trying to steal their watershed. There's a lot of, there's a lot of resource extraction that can happen out there that we're working to prevent. You know, making sure that people don't act irresponsibly with fireworks or, a lot of logging practices actually can cause fires. And so BARC's been working to, you know, prevent extractive, you know, industries out in the forest. Currently, a lot of our staff and volunteers are actually out in Mount Hood National Forest right now. They've been there for 2 weeks at an event we call Base Camp, and they're currently out there ground truthing the largest timber sale we've ever seen on Mount Hood. And it's a timber sale that was promoted as preventing forest fires, creating fire resiliency, you know, and it's 13,000 acres that's supposed to protect the forest, if you can believe that. And so we're trying to basically turn the dialogue on its head, because, you know, anybody can look, if you go out and look at these forests, and I just did this literally a week and a half ago, and watched an active logging process, and it's heartbreaking. It was even more heartbreaking than watching the fire, because fire is a natural part of the ecosystem and logging is not. And so preventing, you know, logging out there will, you know, do so much more to prevent forest fires, because what people don't realize is that the forests contain a lot of carbon, and, you know, that's super important for preventing climate change. The reason that we are having these catastrophic fires is because we're not paying attention to climate change. And so, you know, actually addressing the fact that these forests, you know, are carbon sinks and can create resiliency by leaving them standing is super important. And it hasn't been part of the dialogue, and it hasn't been part of our forest plan. And we've been working to shine a light on that, about how outdated our forest plan and our forest practices are, because they don't take into account fire as part of the ecosystem. They don't take into account climate change and resiliency.
That's the thing. I wanted to ask you about exactly that. As this is, we've created conditions that are outside, well outside the norm, and not taking that into account. So we have to expect fires and other fires is one thing. There may be other catastrophes, landslides and so forth.
Yeah.
Ahead of us, extreme changes.
Extreme weather will
produce the extreme conditions that we are unprepared for.
Mm-hmm.
So, can you talk a little bit long term? The best thing would be to keep people and all of their activities to stay out of the forest, no matter how well intentioned. Timber companies think they're doing everybody a big favor. Hikers think they're doing everybody stay out. But what sort of what would we want to do to stay in front of plans that corporations might have for exploiting catastrophe? Because that's what they do; they exploit catastrophe. Mm-hmm. What do we do to stay out in front?
Well, you know, Bark thinks that people should be in the forest. But, you know,
that's
in a
just
good
my
way.
Opinion. In a good
yeah,
way, yeah.
There's
right.
no way you're going
exactly.
to keep, you know, the millions of people
yeah.
moving to this area out of the beautiful forest. Mm. A lot of that is the reason that they moved here. But, you know, you can make it so that it's a protected place. And as we've been saying for years, the recreation industry brings way more jobs to Oregon than logging industry does. If you've ever gone out and seen this machine called a feller buncher. It's this big, huge machine that basically does the work of three or five men. Mm. And, you know, those are the reasons that we're losing jobs in the forest. You know, so we're working on a lot of projects. So you have to make people get into the forest and see what's going on. And then once they do, they will fall in love with this place and they will work to protect it. And, you know, you shine a light on the timber sale program with the Forest Service. The fact that it, for years and years, has done nothing but lose money. You know, it's a government boondoggle, and the Forest Service could be doing so much more to proactively make the forest a healthy place, a place that where recreation can thrive as well as nature, habitat for endangered species, not to mention all the drinking water that we get from Mount Hood. You know.
And those are the terms that the argument has to be couched in. The benefit
yeah.
to all of us for
right. It's not just dollar signs for when you cut a tree down. It has so much more value standing as a natural, healthy forest for both the animals that live there and the people that, get recreation and clean drinking water from it.
Joy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
We're so glad that you could talk a little bit about this. And yes, indeed, for us and for all of us, and it is all of our responsibilities to protect and preserve the forests that we all share. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, September 6, 2017. Engineering for us this morning, the indomitable Derek Hooks, also the AM News and Public Affairs Director. Thanks, Derek. This is Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening in. Stay tuned.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
Today on Flashpoints, we spend the hour with legendary UFW co-founder Dolores Huerta. She joins us to talk about the new film, Dolores, produced, written, and directed by filmmaker Peter Bratt, opening this week in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and in selective theaters around the country. We have got Dolores and Peter Bratt in studio, and we are incredibly excited about that. All this coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We have in the studio Dolores Huerta of the Dolores Huerta Foundation, co-founder of the United Farm Workers. We have award-winning director, producer, writer of the film Dolores, Peter Bratt. They are in studio. Our own Miguel Gavila Molina, senior producer here at the Flashpoint Show, is also here. Miguel has known Dolores, shall we say, for quite a long time. And we're going to hear about that, and we're going to hear some good stories. Dolores, welcome back to Flashpoints. It is great to have you with us.
It's great to be here on this historic day.
I want to say power to the people.
Absolutely.
I want to begin, though, with some serious news-breaking information. And let me ask you the question this way. We saw that President Trump, God, that sticks in my throat, has rescinded the DACA, jeopardizing tens of thousands of lives. A terrible decision that hurts the kids and their families in so many different ways. And this announcement comes on the same day that we hear that the first Dreamers were actually killed trying to save other folks in Houston. And I should add, in Houston, a city of over 600,000 undocumented people who don't know whether to seek shelter or to run away from the authorities that are supposed to give it to them. Your thoughts on the cancellation of DACA and sort of all of this?
Well, what they're saying is that they're going to shoot it over to the Congress. And that's kind of an interesting ploy, that I believe, is what they're going to be doing. And Jeff Sessions, I heard the interview, his interview on the radio, and he said that Obama had overextended his authority and had not gone through the Congress to provide the DACA, the Dreamers, with the ability to stay here in this country. But he actually lied. And I think, unfortunately, that's the way the Republicans take power, is by lying and cheating. And because actually there have been many presidents since this country was founded that made decisions on immigration without going through the Congress. And so when he said that, that was just a lie. The other thing that worries me, because I don't trust the Republicans at all, is that they may be doing this to be divisive. And they may already have a plan to take it to the Congress and pass it, which they might be able to do. You know, in the last Congress, immigration reform got out of the Senate. It was held up in the House of Representatives. And they might be doing that too. If they do that, now we don't know what their strategy is, but I think we have to be aware of the different options that they might choose. And if they do pass something for the Dreamers, and it might be then to be able to save some of their congressmen, Republicans, that are going to be in danger in the next election. Because in the next election, every single congressperson in the House of Representatives has to run for Congress. And they know because of all of their actions, like forgiving Joe Arpaio, who actually did commit a crime, many of the Latinos are going to be organizing to take out some of these Republicans, and maybe they're going to try to buy favor with the Dreamers. We'll see what happens. In the meantime, I know that there will be attorneys that are going to be going to court on this issue, and they will be able to prove that what Jeff Sessions said was a total lie. Because presidents have, they have been able to issue dictates to have people become residents of this country without going to the Congress.
You know, they say he talks about the rule of law, and I'm just thinking about his name. They say sometimes what's in a name, but Jefferson, Beauregard, Sessions the Third, Jefferson. For Jefferson Davis, Beauregard for the military structuralist who engineered the leaving of the Union, and here is a man who spent his life hating and undermining the lives of black people and brown people who wanted to vote. I mean, he literally made a career of trying to stop people from voting. And he talks about the rule of law. Your thoughts on that?
Well, we have to counteract that. And I think this is, as I mentioned before, I think in 2018, and we have people that are already campaigning and running for Congress, that if all of us get involved, if every single one of us gets involved, then we can take some of these Republicans out and build that wall, you know, that congressional wall. We're going to have our own wall. And it's going to be a wall of resistance. And it's going to be in the U.S. Congress.
The most beautiful wall you're ever going to see.
The most beautiful wall ever. But where the woods that have to do it brick by brick, vote by vote, you know, step by step, phone call by phone call, door knocking by door knocking, each door that we knock. But the thing is that it's in our hands and we can make it happen. And we're going to not only get justice for the Dreamers, but get justice for the rest of our undocumented community.
You know, there is, in the context of all this, it got buried, but there's a major victory, and you had something to do with it, and that's the victory that happened in Arizona when a federal judge decided that the ethnic studies program, this just happened, that the ethnic studies program there was a successful, positive, important program that the people of Tucson and the kids of Tucson deserve to have. Now, you were the butt of the racists who try, you know, they used you as an excuse for canceling the program. You want to talk about, could you just remind us a little bit about what happened there?
Well, I'm happy that we have that victory, and I think we need to take that victory of ethnic studies into our kindergartens, okay, to erase the abysmal ignorance that we have in our society, because people do not know the contributions of people of color to this country. People from Mexico that tilled the lands and built the railroads along with our Chinese, Japanese, Filipino, people from India that were brought into this country. And unless we erase the ignorance and the bigotry and the misogyny and the homophobia, we're going to continue to have a country in distress like we have right now, because then our kids of color do not know what their people have done. They always feel like second-class citizens. And our Anglo children, you know, they continue to have this white entitlement because they think that somehow their ancestors from Europe did it all. And so we have to learn that. So we hope that that victory will be one that we can really use down there at the kindergarten level.
They accused you of hating white people. Do you hate anybody?
Well, you know, I have some of my grand. Actually, I have a great grandfather that was born in Vermont, and he was married to an Irish woman. And my other grandparents came from Spain and from France, in addition to my other grandparents that came from Mexico. So, and the father of the Chicano movement was a white man, Fred Ross Sr., whose son Fred Ross Jr. is still active here and working. So, we don't hate anybody. We are a movement of love and justice, but we want to reach those people that still have this racism and hatred in their hearts. We're trying to reach them so that they can join us in making a better world.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We have in the studio Dolores Huerta of the Dolores Huerta Foundation. We have Peter Bratt. He is the writer, director, producer of the new film, Dolores, an amazing film. I just watched this thing before I came into the studio. I'm so excited. It's a film that demonstrates a group of people who are ahead of their time, but the film is right on time. Again, Dennis Bernstein with an old friend of Dolores Huerta, Miguel Gavilán Molina. How did you meet Dolores?
Marching. Marching. I think I remember I was 12 years old. My tío, my Nino, and a couple of my tío's compadres drove down in 1966 to Deleno because it had been a call. And I didn't even know what was going on. I was just... But when I saw that red flag and when I saw the hundreds of brown Mexicans and nobody was looking at the ground, nobody was beat down from the weight of being poor, of being out there in the fields of misery. And then I heard something, and it sparked a fire in my heart. I heard that, first of all, we were human beings. We weren't just burros. We weren't just farm animals, part of the livestock with no rights. And then I see so many Mexicanos. Usually when you see people in the fields, especially the men, we're all broken down. Their heads tilted, never looking up, always stuck on the ground. But that day I saw everybody looking, you know, seeing sombreros. There was a sense of pride. And I never felt that. You know, I used to remember being in the files and the airplanes coming from the Migra and everybody running. I'm Chicano. I still ran with everybody. Like, you know, scared deer running into the bush. I mean, la Migra, everybody running. But after that day, we didn't do that anymore. So, yeah, and then every time Dolores was going to be in the area, I'd bring LBA, Los Brown Angels. We were kind of a car club y todo. And we come to the marchas, to the Leno, to Sacramento, to San Francisco, to San Jose. That's how I learned. And then I started marching next to her. When we were in a crisis here, what, 15, 16 years ago, they tried to take the station away from us. Who was there in the front lines with us? You on one side and me on the other? Dolores.
That's right.
Because in some ways, and this is... The United Farm Workers was impacted by the Chicano movement and in some ways was part of the evolution of the Chicano movement. But when you hear the voice, yeah, Fred Ross helped a lot in the movimiento, especially organizing, bringing in the idea of sindicatos, unionism. Pero Dolores, in a lot of circles, is la abuela, is the grandmother of the Chicano movement. She gave voice to all of us. She empowered all of us. And that's how I, marching is how I got to know Dolores. And myself and Chuch, I don't know, we've marched hundreds of miles. There used to be a point we marched from Hillsborough, California, to Windsor. I don't know, 7-10 miles. Yeah, and El Raso del Sol, remember.
We did that a couple of times and then marching to Sacramento.
Right, ahí estamos. And we've done that. So that's how I've got to know her. But the most important thing, I think, is for me, you brought voice to Chicanismo. And empowered la mujer. I came out of a single-parent household with my jefa. You know, she ran the familia. She made us into a crew to go work, and she put two of us to make a man, you know, so we would be paid a man's wages, two of my carnales. Pero it was that drive. She was empowered by seeing for the first time a Mexicana, a brown woman, speaking for all of us.
Mm. Well, let's talk about that. Your role, your work as co-founder of the United Farm Workers was, you talk about breaking the glass ceiling. Well, you were outside, so the ceiling was a little more invisible, but it was at 110 degrees coming down, and you're out there with mostly men. Did you ever think... My mom used to, every day before she went to work, she'd refer to her makeup as war paint. getting ready to go out there and fight. How did you ever, did you used to think about yourself consciously as a woman out there fighting? Did it ever stop you? Was it daunting? Did people try and stop you? Talk about that.
Well, actually, because of the message that we were carrying to the workers, which, by the way, Fred Ross, you know, who organized CSER and organized myself, taught us, Fred Ross Sr., and that if you can talk to a few people at a time, and you, what you're doing when you're talking to them, you're empowering them. You're reminding them that they have power and that they have the power to change things in their lives. But if they don't do it, nobody's going to do it for them. And then things will stay the same. And when you have these house meetings with people and bring them together, and then when they all come together, then